You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book, The Future is Faster Than You Think, How Converging Technologies Are Transforming Business, Industries, and Our Lives by Peter Diamandis and Stephen Kotler. The Future of Shopping. The first platform play. It started with watches. It ended with hedge fund managers. And in between, it reshaped a nation. What was it? The Sears catalog. Richard Warren Sears was born on December 7th, 1863, in Stuartville, Minnesota. His mother was a housewife, father failed gold miner turned blacksmith wagon maker. But his newfound financial security didn't last. In Richard's early teenage years, his father lost all their money in a disastrous stock farm investment. The family never recovered. A few years later, insult was added to injury, and his father died suddenly, leaving Richard to support all his sisters and mother. He was all of 16 years old. Out of desperation, Sears taught himself telegraphy and then found work with the railroad. While he rose to become the station agent, he still didn't earn enough money to support his family, which meant he was always looking for new ways to increase his income. One of these ways arrived in 1886. A Chicago wholesaler had shipped a case of watches to a jeweler in Redwood Falls, Minnesota, but the jeweler had refused delivery. So the watches were still sitting at the railroad station where Sears worked. Never one to miss an opportunity, Sears contacted the manufacturer with an offer to sell the watches himself. Their hard cost was $12 a piece, but stores typically sold them at double the price. Sears, though, had a radical idea: simply charge less. This was the birth of discount pricing, and Sears' timing was amazing. In the early 1870s, the nation of the United States was in the throes of a great railroad expansion. For the first time in history, average citizens could travel hundreds of miles a day. But keeping time during those journeys was an issue. Back then, every city tracked time by its own clock, so America had 300 different time zones. In 1883, wanting to ensure the trains ran on schedule, the railways decided to standardize matters a little bit. They divided the country into four large time zones, and clocks were adjusted accordingly. Suddenly, especially for station agents, watches kept trains running on time. So suddenly everyone needed one, plus Sears' asking price, an incredible deal at $14. Sears ended up making a $5,000 profit, worth over $120,000 today, on his first crate of watches that he sold. He was 23 years old and newly minted entrepreneur. Using the profits from the initial order to purchase another crate, he founded the R.W. Sears Watch Company, advertised his wares in local newspapers, and set out to expand his territory. In 1887, Sears hired a young watch repairman named Alvin Curtis Roebuck to assist him. A partnership bloomed and the business blossomed. 4 years later, the duo published their first catalog, a 52-page selection of watches and jewelry. 2 years after that, the catalog was a 196-page wonder, especially for a country that had grown up rural. No longer selling just watches and jewelry, they expanded into everything from saddles to sewing machines, changing American shopping forever. Over the next decade, the company continued to grow with a serious assist from the Postal Service. Many rural counties didn't have mail delivery, which had become a very hot-button issue. Congress felt that delivery costs would be prohibitive, and local retailers, the folks that ran the mom-and-pop stores that dominated the country, were fiercely protective of their natural monopolies. But in 1896, Congress passed the Rural Free Delivery Act, opening up this new territory. Sears rushed in to fill the void with the advent of the automobile, aiding in this rush. A network of roads soon emerged, allowing mail order merchants to reach nearly every home in America, which is what helped Sears catalog become one of the most potent forces for the democratization in U.S. history. Before these catalogs, local merchants played all kinds of games with both the availability and price of goods. The rich, as usual, had access to high-quality merchandise, while the poor had to shift through the dregs. Sears rewrote these rules. His catalog didn't discriminate between rich and poor. Prices were clearly marked, and everyone, regardless of class, creed, or color, paid the same price. This non-discriminatory approach soon paid off. Within 10 years, wrote journalist Derek Thompson in The Atlantic, the book bloomed to more than 500 pages. Before long, the so-called consumer's Bible read like the index of the entire U.S. economy. The company sold dolls and dresses, cocaine and tombstones, and even do-it-yourself homes. Decades before technology analysts started talking about platforms, Sears was the OG platform for technology. In 1915, at its height, the catalog had 1,200 pages, and it sold over 100,000 items and generated over $100 million a year in revenue. And this was just the beginning, since Sears went into retail next. In the 1920s, there was a great wave of urbanization. Americans moved from the country to the city, and Sears capitalized on the shift, opening over 300 retail stores, one in every major American metropolis, before the decade's end. By the middle of the next decade, one U.S. dollar out of every 100 was spent at Sears, and there were important reasons for this incredible success. Author Jeremy Rifkin points out that all major economic paradigm shifts share a common denominator. At a moment in time, Rifkin told the Business Insider, three defining technologies emerge and converge to create an infrastructure that fundamentally changes the way we manage power and move economic activity across the value chain. And those three technologies are new communication technologies to more efficiently manage economic activity, new sources of energy to power the economic activity, and new modes of mobility to more efficiently move the economic activity. This was the exact wave Sears rode to prominence. The U.S. Postal Service was its communications technology, cheap Texas oil was its fuel source, and the automobile was the new mode of transport. Yet, paradigm shift replaced paradigm shift, and we all know where that road ends. After a 132-year run, in the autumn of 2018, Sears filed for bankruptcy. Between 2013 and 2018, the company shuttered over 1,000 stores, lost over $6 billion in revenue, and left its hedge fund owners to sell what remained for spare parts. So what happened between the 1920s and the 2013s? Walmart happened. Even though Sears pioneered the idea of discounted goods, Walmart beat them at their own game. They out-demonetized and out-democratized Sears. They built their stores on cheaper land, paid cheaper wages, and sold cheaper goods. But most importantly, they saw the exponential writing on the wall. The tragic irony of the Sears saga, continues Thompson in The Atlantic, is that communications technology marshaled so brilliantly during Sears' rise was instrumental in the company's downfall. In the 1980s, Walmart and other modern retailers used digital technology to understand what shoppers were buying and to relay those findings to Walmart headquarters, which could place bulk orders for the now best-selling brands and products. With Walmart playing a superior game of sell cheap stuff efficiently, Sears' fall was swift. In the early 1980s, it was five times as big as Walmart by total revenue. By the early 1990s, Walmart was twice as big as Sears. But this was only chapter two of retail disruption. History, of course, has a way of repeating itself. Amazon, a company founded about the same time Walmart was disrupting Sears, would blend the best of both models. They used the same postal service that Sears rode to prominence on and the same communications technologies that helped Walmart do the same. They became the everything store that replaced the everything store that replaced the everything store. And it's not just Sears and Walmart that are now feeling the pinch. To say that the retail space has changed over the past decade would be a stunning understatement. E-commerce giants such as Amazon and Alibaba are digitizing the entire industry, riding exponential growth to new heights. Meanwhile, many brick-and-mortar stores have joined Sears in bankruptcy. In 2017 alone, the total was 6,700. All one needs to do is look at the following table to understand the massive upheavals afoot. The table shows the progress of Sears, JCPenney, Nordstrom, Macy's, Best Buy, Target, Walmart, Amazon from 2006 to 2019. So while Sears lost 100% of its value between those years, Amazon gained 5,103%. And if this level of disruption looks unsettling, realize the e-commerce revolution is just beginning. Even though online sales increased from $34 billion in Q1 of 2009 to $115 billion in Q3 of 2017, this growth spurt only accounted for 10% of total retail sales. Why? The great many people are still not connected to the internet. In abundance, we referred to the rising billion as those newly enabled digital masses coming online in the decades ahead. Taking the connected measure of humanity from 3.8 billion in 2017 to 8.2 billion in 2025. The majority of these people won't frequent retail stores or shopping malls. Instead, for reasons that will become much clearer as we go along, they will make their purchases digitally via mobile devices from the comfort of their own homes. To put this in broader terms, because retail is nestled at the convergence of communications, energy, and transportation breakthroughs, it's a canary in a coal mine, ground zero for Rifkin's next major economic paradigm shift. And one thing's for certain, shopping will never be the same. Artificial intelligence and the retail experience. No one really understands the impact artificial intelligence will have on retail, but once you start to get a handle on what's coming, it's fairly clear the unfair advantages it'll bring to store owners, splitting the market into two camps, those who make full use of AI and those who declare bankruptcy. AI makes retail cheaper, faster, more efficient, touching everything from the customer service to product delivery. It also redefines the shopping experience, making it frictionless, and once we allow AI to make purchases for us, ultimately invisible. Let's begin with the basics, the act of turning desire into purchase. For most of us, this means going to the store and buying what we need. Some of us rely on online marketplaces, and sometimes these marketplaces deliver our desires, sometimes they don't. Now, if you're lucky enough to deploy a personal assistant, you'll have the luxury of describing what you want to someone who knows you well enough to buy the exact thing most of the time. For most of us who don't, enter the digital assistant. Right now, the four horsemen of the retail apocalypse are waging war for our wallets. Amazon's Alexa, Google's Assistant, Apple's Siri, and Alibaba's Tmall Genie are going head-to-head in a battle to become the platform du jour for voice-activated AI-assisted commerce. Note the glaring absence of any traditional retailers from this list. This is unlikely to change given the head start these horsemen have. Already they spent billions in the AI arms race. We've seen a market shift like this before. Nokia was the world leader in cell phones, but when smartphones showed up, they ended up out of business. Why? They were in the phone business, but suddenly the phone business had become the computer business. With companies like Apple and Google as their new competitors, they could never catch up. And this brings us back to our predicted parade of retail bankruptcies. For baby boomers who grew up watching Captain Kirk talk to the Enterprise's computer on Star Trek, digital assistants seem a little like science fiction. But for millennials, it's just the next logical step in a world that's auto-magical. And as these millennials enter their consumer prime, revenue from products purchased via voice-driven commands are projected to leap from $2 billion today to $8 billion by 2023. And while we're still a ways away from making retail purchases completely frictionless, the data indicates the direction the trend is heading. On average, consumers using Amazon Echo spent more than standard Amazon Prime customers, $1,700 versus $1,300. Perhaps there's no better example of the disruptive potential of digital assistants than the 2018 demo of Google Duplex. Every year at the Google I.O. conference, 7,000 attendees get together for 3 days of keynotes, code labs, and highlight the interactive demos. In Silicon Valley, product demos are where legends are born. In decades past, it was black turtleneck clad Steve Jobs who, wait, there's one more thinged his way into the history books. But in 2018, the soft-spoken Google CEO, Sundar Pichai, may have stolen back the crown. Pacing the stage of Mountain View's Shoreline Amphitheater, Pichai began his demo by pointing out that a big part of getting things done still involves making phone calls. You may want to get an oil change, he noted. Maybe call a plumber in the middle of the week, or even schedule a haircut appointment. We think AI can help with this problem. Then pipe through Shoreline's massive speakers with follow-along captions projected on a giant screen behind him. Pichai played the audience a series of pre-recorded phone calls made by Google Duplex, their next generation of digital assistant. The first call made a reservation at a restaurant. The second one booked a haircut appointment. The haircut appointment cracked everyone up, primarily because Duplex has natural language abilities which include dropping the long hmm in the middle of the conversation. In neither case did the person at the other end of the phone have any idea they were talking to a machine and not to a human being. For certain, this issue of AI anonymity raised some red flags of if an AI can fool a receptionist, who else could AI fool? In the days after the conference, the demo produced a backlash, and Duplex now announces itself as Google's automated booking system. But the system's success speaks of how seamlessly AI can blend into our retail lives and how convenient it will continue to make them. This is just the beginning. The next retail arena being disrupted by AI is customer service. According to a recent Zendesk study, good customer service increases the possibility of a purchase by 42%, but bad customer service translates into a 52% chance of losing that sale forever, meaning more than half of us will stop shopping at a store due to a single disappointing customer service interaction. These are significant financial stakes. They're also problems perfectly suited for an AI solution. The same technology Pichai demonstrated that can make phone calls for consumers can also answer phones for retailers, a development that's unfolding in two different ways. First, for organizations interested in keeping humans involved, there's Beyond Verbal, a Tel Aviv-based startup that built an AI customer service coach. Simply by analyzing customer voice intonation, the system can tell whether a person on the phone is about to blow a gasket, is generally excited, or anything in between. Based on research conducted on more than 70,000 subjects in more than 30 different languages, Beyond Verbal's app can detect 400 different markers of human moods, attitudes, and personality traits. Already, it's been integrated into call centers to help human sales agents understand and react to customer emotions, making these calls more pleasant and also, more interestingly, more profitable. For example, by analyzing word choice and vocal style, Beyond Verbal's system can tell what kind of shopper the person online actually is. If they're an early adopter, the AI alerts the sales agent to offer the latest and greatest. If they're more conservative, then it suggests items more tried and true. Second are customers and companies like New Zealand Soul Machines, working to replace human customer service agents altogether. Powered by IBM Watson, Soul Machines builds lifelike customer service avatars designed for empathy, making them one of many helping to pioneer the field of emotionally intelligent computing. We'll explore this in depth a little later, but what's critical here is a single statistic, 40%. With their technology, 40% of all customer service interactions are now resolved with a high degree of satisfaction and without any human intervention whatsoever. And because the system is built using neural nets, it's continuously learning with every interaction, meaning that percentage will continue to improve. The number of these interactions continues to grow as well. Software manufacturer Autodesk now includes a Soul Machine avatar named AVA, Autodesk Virtual Assistant, in all of their new offerings. This avatar, we'll call She, lives in a small window on a screen ready to soothe tempers, troubleshoot problems, and forever banish these long tech support hold times. For Daimler Financial Services, they built an avatar named Sarah, who helps customers with arguably three of modernity's most annoying tasks, financing, leasing, and insuring a car. Of course, in the future, where distributed autonomous organizations, or DAOs, will control fleets of autonomous taxis, there will soon come a point that a DAO AI will be talking to Daimler's Sarah about that financing, leasing, and insuring. It's all now AI to AI negotiation with no human required. Yet, as we'll soon see, this isn't just about AI. It's about AI converging with additional exponentials. Add networks and sensors to the story, and it raises the scale of disruption, upping the FQ, the frictionless quotient, in our frictionless shopping adventure.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC. But it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF, 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenari, professional futurist.
We are looking at the book, The Future is Faster Than You Think, How Converging Technologies Are Transforming Business, Industries, and Our Lives by Peter Diamandis and Stephen Kotler. We're looking at the future of shopping. Go, go, gone are cashiers. It's April 2026, a cold rainy day in Chicago. You're supposed to meet your mother for lunch, but you forgot your coat. On the Uber autonomous ride downtown, a quick online search reveals a shop selling those new eco-friendly vegan leather jackets you've heard so much about. The leather grown from stem cells and no cows harmed along the way. You click the interested button on your screen, slide the phone back into your pocket, and forget about it. The store's AI interfaces with your phone's AI and automatically redirects your taxi. Upon arrival, you realize you're outside of one of those throwback craft retail shops where they actually still employ real living human beings. A woman called Sylvia meets you at the door holding the vegan leather coat you selected. The jacket fits perfectly, which isn't a surprise. A couple months ago, you used the modified Wii sensor in your phone to map your body down to every last flap and fold. Most shoes have weight sensors these days, so your waistline fluctuates, the body map automatically adjusts. Long before you walked into that shop, both your phone and the store's competitors knew your size and shape. No need to wait in line to pay for the item either. A variety of cameras and sensors track both of you and the jacket so that you walk out of the door with the price instantly deducted from your bank account. Perhaps even your cryptocurrency account. Plus, because these sensors also know that this is your first trip to the store, they also try to tempt you into a second shopping adventure by texting you a digital coupon that will deduct 25% over your next purchase. At the same time your transaction settles, sensors built into the rack where your jacket once hung alert to the store's AI. The AI orders another jacket from the manufacturer and texts an employee to restock the now empty hanger. Also, turns out this is the third vegan leather jacket sold in 2 days. So the inventory control system notices the trend and orders a couple of backup jackets in popular sizes just in case. The above scenario is not that far off. In fact, it requires little beyond the ever-expanding impact of the Internet of Things, IoT, on our world, something that will happen almost automatically as more and more devices are connected to the Internet. And it's quite an impact. By 2025, according to the research done by McKinsey, the value of the Internet of Things on retail will be somewhere between $410 billion and $1.2 trillion. Even better, most of this technology has arrived. We're going to be discussing this and other really important topics to your future, so please stay tuned to future shows.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Tenari, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
listening to CJS.